So this is the situation at the moment, right? Okay, so now we've seen that certain Kahanim, they don't even remember, but they knew that their ancestors served in the Beis HaMikdash, they were prohibited from drinking wine all year round, right? So now Rabbi Omer, you know, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi said, Omer Ani, I say, in my opinion, he says, Otom Lishtos Yayin Liyoylam. I would say that a Kohen should never be allowed to drink any wine. Because, you know, today, since we don't know what the Yichus is, if a person knows that he's a Kohen, and maybe any moment the Beis HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt, and if it's rebuilt, he has to be ready for the Avodah. So therefore, under those circumstances, I would say that a Kohen should never be permitted to drink any wine.
What about Sam?
Yeah.
No wine for you.
Abol Moeh says, but what can
even
I do?
Even on Pesach.
It says, Shetakonose Kalkalose. Because the thing that, Takono is something, the thing that fixes him up, and Kalkola is the thing, you know, that is bad for him. But what he wants to say is as follows. The fact, you know, that the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, this is the Takono, right? In other words, this is bad, that the Beis HaMikdash is no longer in existence. But Takono, so it makes it permissible for him in order to drink the wine. In other words, it fixes up for him the fact that the other thing, you know, is brought to destruction. Okay, in other words, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash now makes permissible to a Kohen to drink. But you have to realize, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi lived when? He lived about the year 200. I mean, they always figure that the redaction of the Mishnah took place approximately in that year. Naturally, he lived before the Common Era, right? So the point is that he lived approximately 100 years after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? Now, that being the case, what was the immediate reaction after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? So there we find also Mishnah and Gemara and so on that speak about, you know, the reaction of the people. And, you know, they were in great despair. But nevertheless, they were told, you know, that they should never despair, that maybe Mehera Yibona Beis HaMikdash, okay? That the Beis HaMikdash might be speedily rebuilt. And they kept on hoping and hoping that the Taka would happen. Particularly because with the Roman Emperor, they had different experiences. One emperor, of course, I mean, you know, the Emperor Vespasian, Titus, you know, naturally they were opposed to the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. And then there are others who are a little bit more favorably inclined. As, for example, Claudius was a friend. Oh, no, Claudius is before, yeah, before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. But there were Roman emperors that were more favorably inclined. At a later period, you had the Emperor Julian, who was ready to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. He gave permission to the Jews to rebuild it. And then he was murdered by the Christians because, you know, he felt that Christianity was all wrong. So they killed him, and that was the end of any hope, you know, to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. But there was that possibility, and they kept hoping that the Beis HaMikdash would be rebuilt. The Beis HaMikdash is going to be built any moment. In that case, you have to have Kohanim who would be fit. But Rabbi, by the time 100 years had passed, and he saw that the Beis HaMikdash was not rebuilt, so he said, you know, what's the use? I mean, we can't hope that it'll happen overnight. And so therefore, he gave the permission to the Kohanim to drink. Omar Abaye, so Abaye, of course, is later than, you know, than Rabbi. Of course, Abaye was in Babylonia. But he asked the question, he says, Kaman Shosu Hoidno Kahane Chamro, says, in accordance with whose opinion are Kohanim drinking wine at this time? So the answer is Karebi. In other words, they made use of this opinion of Rebbe in order to permit Kohanim to drink wine. Okay. Now, the Mishnah continues and it says, Anshe Mishbom Yanshe Mahmud Asun Nesapir Lechabes, right? That people who belong to the Mishmar, in other words, the Kahanim, the Anshe Mahmud, and also even the Israelim who belong to that particular group, you know, that particular week. So he says, they are prohibited from taking a haircut, the saper, or the chabes, or from washing their garments, right? V'chamishi, but on Thursday, mutar mipnei kvod haShabbos. They are permitted to wash or to take a haircut in honor of the Shabbos. Now, of course, the question is, why? My Tama, what's the reason why they said that they're not allowed to do it? So, Omar Rabba, Baruch Hanan said, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, he said the name of Rabbi Yochanan, he says, Kedei shelo yikodzu le'erev Shabbos. The answer is, excuse me, I skipped a line. Kedei shelo yikodzu le'mishmartam sheng meduvolet. The answer is, because they should not enter upon their particular week of service looking gefelach. They have to look decent. Therefore, the clothes have to be washed, the hair has to be cut, they have to look decent when they come into Beis HaMikdash. Now, this is a similar reason why there is a prohibition against taking a haircut or against doing laundry during Chol HaMoed.
Just consider work.
Well, work is one part, but I mean that the haircut is not particularly work. Okay? But the reason why is because when Yom Tov starts, you're supposed to be looking your best. Don't wait until Chol HaMoed before you take a haircut or something like that, you see. So that's the reason why it's prohibited. And the same thing is true as far as the laundry is concerned, but it's a secondary reason. As you said, it's considered work. And you're not supposed to do work if you can help it, unless it's absolutely necessary. The Mishnah in Moed Katan, for example, which gives permission to certain groups of people to take a haircut during Chol HaMoed. Person who's been in jail and just been freed, didn't have an opportunity to do it. Or he's come from a long distance and he just landed during Chol HaMoed, okay, or something like that. So for him, there is special permission granted to take it. But for the ordinary person who has a barber available beforehand, you should do all this prior to Yom Tov, so that you look at your very best when Yom Tov comes. Okay? Tana Rabbanan. Now we have another teaching. Find this Gemara also in Sanhedrin. It says over there, Melech Mistapi Bechol Yom. The king takes a haircut every day. Of course, we're talking about a Jewish king. Mm-hmm. Okay? He has to have a haircut every day. Naturally, not on Shabbos, we're not talking about that. But, you know, all the other days of the week, takes a haircut every day. Kohen Gadol, the high priest, he has to have his haircut Me'erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos, from Friday to Friday. Okay? Because why from Friday to Friday? We'll see in a minute why. Kohen Hedyot, an ordinary Kohen, Achas L'Shloshim Yom. He has to take a haircut once every 30 days. Okay? So now they analyze it. Melech Mistapi Bechol Yom. The king has to take a haircut every day. My Tama, what is the reason for that? So Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Zabda, so Rabbi Abba, the son of Zabda, said, O Makro, because there is a pasuk which says, Melech biyofyo techezet inecha. Your eyes should behold the king in all his beauty. In other words, when will he look beautiful? If he has the proper haircut, trim, etc., etc., okay? Has to look his very best, so that the subjects, you know, will feel that sense of awe and respect. And so on for him. Yeah. Right. Kohen Gadol, why does he have to take his haircut Me'erev Shabbos, Me'erev Shabbos, from one Friday to the next? So my Tama, so I'm a Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak. So he said, Ho'il l'mishmeros v'shchadshos, because every Shabbos, this was when each each mishmor would come over and
start the duties.
Right, they would start the duties on Shabbos. The old kohanim of the week, the previous week, would finish their work that they were doing, and the new kohanim would come in order to relieve.
Add to the approach, to the Shabbos.
Right, but
Shabbos.
Yeah, so he has to take his hair for there of Shabbos. But the point is, so that on Shabbos, when the new kohanim see the Kohen Gadol again, they will be impressed with his beauty and his glory, and that he's somebody, right, he's presenting somebody to whom they could look up to with respect. Alright. Kohen Hedyot, how about the fact that the ordinary Kohen, Achas L'Shloshim Yoim in Alon, How do we know that he has to take a haircut every 30 days? So they say, Asyur pera pera minozik. This we learn by what we call a gezeirah shavah from the Nazarite. Now remember, what do we mean by gezeirah shavah? Gezeirah shavah means that they have a similarity of expressions in case A and in case B. Therefore, if we know what, for example, case A is, then we can infer that case B also follows the same thing. Right. So you find it quite often in the Gemara, you know, that it's a, as we say, it's a gezeirah shavah, okay? However, I also have to caution you, gezeirah shavah has to be also on the basis of the fact that there is a tradition that this was an acceptable gezeirah shavah. Otherwise, you can go hunting into the Torah and you'll find, you know, two words that are the same and say, look, it says S over here, it says S over there. That's not enough. That's not the basis of the gezeirah shavah, okay? But here, the word para, which after all is an unusual word, para means that it's the lock of the hair, okay? So it's also related to the word that means that you look all messed up, paruah, okay? Yeah. So what they're saying is over here, in the case of the Nazarite, siv hocha over here, in the case of the Kohan, the Kohanim, we have a pasuk which says, it happens to be a pasuk that we find in the book of Yechezkel. Remember, Yechezkel was a Kohen, and the latter part of the book of Yechezkel, Sidney, Bush Bilstadot. A latter part of the book, he has an idealized portrait of the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, and also the legitimacy of the Kohanim who would serve over there. There's a pasuk. It's a chapter that begins with the words Vakohanim, Halvayim B'nei Tzadok, that the priests, the Levites who were the descendants of Tzadok, they are the real Kohanim. And then, it happens to be the Haftorah, by the way, for Pasha Emor, if you want to look it up over there. And he has different regulations over there for the Kohen. In some cases, the regulations are even stricter than what the Torah has to say. As for example, when it came to marriage, he says, you know, a Kohen, of course, is permitted to marry a virgin, but in the Torah, the Kohen also is permitted to marry an almana. Who is he not permitted to marry? This we learned from this learned Kiddush, right? He's not allowed to marry, for example, a divorcee. He's not allowed to marry a convert to Judaism, okay? Giyoris. Or he's not allowed to marry a zona, in other words, a woman who has a reputation for being immoral. Right, he's not allowed to marry those, okay? So, but an almana, he's permitted to marry, okay? The Kohen Gadol, he's only allowed to marry a virgin, he's not allowed to marry a woman. But why did Yechezkel come? Yechezkel said that the only almana that the Kohen could marry would be the almana of another Kohen. In other words, to sort of keep it in the Kohanim family or something like that. But this was stricter than the Torah, and this is one of the reasons why there was a great deal of discussion as to whether to include Sefer Yechezkel in the Tanakh, because of the fact that some of the things, you know, are so similar to Torah that they contradict words that we actually find in the Torah. But eventually they resolve the issue. So Yechezkel, in this case, is not the authority for that. Okay, Torah is the authority, not Yechezkel, right. But, as far as this business is concerned, he says over there, the Rosham lo yigalechu, they're not allowed to, literally, to shave their head, because idolatrous Kohanim, they would do that, they would shave their heads, you know, like they do at, what is that, the school, the VMI, or something like that?
Yeah,
the one where this girl wants to go in, and it's a whole machlokes as to whether she should stay or not.
Oh, right. The Citadel.
The Citadel, right.
Yeah, no,
South Carolina, I guess it is, right.
Villa.
Yeah, shame for guessing, right. But at any rate, you know, you've seen. Now, remember, in the Catholic Church, how do we call the priest? We call him a galach.
Galach, yeah.
Well, why do we call him a galach? Because they shave the hair. Okay, they didn't shave the complete head, but there is,
galach,
right?
Though.
They have a spot that they shave it. So, okay. So, Chezkel says a Kohen is not permitted to shave his head. All right, that's number one. And what else does he say? He also says, Ufera lo yishalechu. Yeah, which means, nor as far as the lock of his hair, he's not allowed to let it literally grow long. Okay? Literally to let it go down. But, you know, he's not allowed to let it grow long. All right. No, so far we know that the Kohen has to have a haircut. But how do we know that it is 30 days? This is the question, right? That every 30 days he has to take his haircut. Uchsiv Hosam. And then in the case of the Nazir, the Nazirite, there it's written, Kadosh Yiyeh, he shall be holy, right? Gadel Peras Arosho, he is also expected to let the lock of his hair grow. So, they say, Ma Lahalon, just as in the case of the Nazir, Shloshim, it's 30 days, right? So Afkan, so likewise here in the case of the Kohen, Shloshim, it's also 30. No, so Gan's fine. But how do we know that in the case of the Nozer it's 30 days? So far, all that we've learned about the Nozer is that, you know, he has to let his hair grow, right? But how long? So the answer is, but Nozer Gufei Menalon. How do we know that in the case of the Nozer that 30 days are involved? So Rav Masta, says, Stam Nazirus Shloshim Yom. This is a klal that we have, that if a person takes a vow that he's going to be a Nazir, but without specifying any specific amount of time that he's going to be a Nazir, then in that case, he has to be a Nazir for 30 days. Stam Nazirus. In other words, you say, I'm going to be a Nazir, but stam, in other words, without specifying. You know, a person could say, I want to be a Nazir for a year.
That's his minimum.
Right. But this is the minimum. So in that case, if he doesn't specify, then he has to observe the Nazirus for 30 days. So they say, Minalon, how do we know that this is so? So, it's interesting how they derive it. Omar Kro, because the Pasuk says, yeah, right? We just read the Pasuk before. It says, Kadosh, yeah, right? He is to be holy, literally. And then Gadel Pera, right? He is to grow his hair, right? So, the Gemara says, yeah. The gematria says, it says, yeah, the word itself, yeah, that adds up to 30 in gematria. Okay? Because a yod, as you know, is 10. Hey is 5. Alright, so 10 and 5 and 10 and 5 gives you 30. So from this we know then that the nozir has to observe 30 days. Okay. Well, there are other gematrias, but this is an interesting gematria. Right? Because, as we see, on the basis of this, this is how they derive that Stam Nazirus is 30 days. Now, once they know that Stam Nazirus is 30 days, so you work on. You say, okay, therefore.
They really went around
the ground. Right, he has to grow his hair for 30 days, so therefore the Kohen can let his hair grow for 30 days. But, you know, after the end, the 30th day, he has to take his haircut, okay? So he should look as the Kohen is expected to look, okay? Homalei Rapopula Abaye, so Rapopula said to Abaye, Vendilma Hachi Kama Rachmona, that maybe the Torah means as follows. It says, Lo Lirbu Klal, maybe it means that the Kohen should not let his hair grow at all. In other words, why do you say that he has to take a haircut every 30 days? Maybe he should also be like the king, like the king Godel, you know, and have his haircut more up, right? So Omalei, so he said to him, look, I have a kosav lo yishaleichu pera, that they are not allowed to let grow the pera, the lock of the hair, then it's kidukamrit, and then that would be exactly the way you said. But hashto defsiv, now that's written, ufera, and the lock of the hair, lo yishaleichu, they're not allowed to let it go long. So it shows us that pera lehevi, he's permitted to have a lock of hair. He doesn't have to shave his hair. He's permitted to have that, but sheluchehu delo lishalche. But he's not permitted to let it grow long. Okay? So they say, Hochi, if this is the case, apilo ha'idna nami, so maybe now too, the Kohen should observe the same rules and regulations. Dumyo dishesuya yayin, just as in the case of drinking wine, intoxication. Ma shesuya yayin bisman biyo, so they say, no. Ma shesuya yayin bisman biyohu, the drinking, the prohibition of drinking wine is only in the time when it's possible for the Kohen to come into the Beis HaMikdash in order to serve, right? Huda Asa, this is when it is prohibited to him. So Shelo Bisman Biyo Shorei, and when the possibility of coming to the Beis HaMikdash is not there, so then he is permitted to drink wine. So Av Hochi, so likewise in this particular case, as far as the haircut is concerned, Nami. Okay, same thing. All right, we'll stop at this particular point and continue from here. Yes, Hashem, next Wednesday.
We're at the bottom of the
near the bottom of Yud Zayin. Right? Yud Zayin.
Well, what's the time schedule next week?
Next week we still daven at 7:45, so we'll leave at 7:00.
August 31st. And what we're on?
And we are now on Yud Ches Amud Aleph. Right. Okay. Now, as I said, because some people, you know, were absent the last week or the last 2 weeks, so therefore I'll just summarize very briefly what we did during the last 2 weeks, and then we shall continue. And there is a good possibility we may complete the second parak tonight.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So it'll be very nice, you know, to start off when we resume our study again, which will be the first Wednesday night in October. Because you know, in September, you know, every Wednesday night it's a yontif. That's all there is to it.
So.
It's either a yontif or some other yontif. It's one or the other, right? And so between them. So, but it doesn't mean that you shouldn't look at the Gemara by yourself.
Avada, avada.
Make Leilman, you know. In fact, it's a mitzvah to learn the yourself.
Avada.
All right. I want to start first of all with a little review of a Mishnah that we have on Yud Zayin Omid Beis, in other words on the preceding page. Okay, of course when I say preceding page I don't mean in this edition, I mean in the Gemara. Okay, the Mishnah that they quote over there, which was at the beginning of the parak, it says Kol HaKotzeh B'Megilas Tainis Delolam Isbe Leponov Oser L'Achavrov Mutar. The Mishnah says over there that wherever a date is given in the Megillas Tainis that we're not allowed to fast on those days, so you're not allowed. Also, it says that and we'll see that there's a difference between some of these things, but the Lola Mispe, the Fulham, means that you're not allowed to make a eulogy, a hesped, even on the day before, but on the day following that specific date, it would be permissible. If we would have, for example, a date, let's say I'm taking arbitrary, all right, today was, for example, the 24th of Elul. Of course, tonight already is the 25th. But, okay, let's say that the 25th of Elul was set aside in Megillas Tainis, that this is a day upon which you're not allowed to fast. Why? Because of some great event that took place on this particular day. So what they're saying is over here is that it's listed in the Megillas Tainis as a date upon which you're not allowed to even make a eulogy, which of course you realize is even a stronger prohibition as compared to, you know, fasting. So in that case it would apply also to the day before it, in other words to the 24th of Elul, but it would not apply to the 26th of Elul. Okay, this is what the Mishnah is that they quote. Now in the course of the Gemara we see that there are differences of opinion. First of all, we find that they quote a little bit from the Megillas Tainis over here in the Gemara, and the general rule over there is that, first of all, they quote a series of dates. One date that they quote is from the beginning of the month of Nisan, from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, right through the 8th of Nisan. That these are days upon which you're not allowed to fast, right? And it's also understood then that the prohibition would extend even to the day prior to that, right? In other words, to the 29th day of the month of Adar. Okay. What is the reason why these were considered Yomim Tevim? So the Gemara explains eventually that these were days upon which there was an argument between the Sadducim, the Sadducees, who were, shall we say, sectarians, right, who disagreed with the Chachamim, and during these 8 days, beginning with Rish Chedesh Nisan, right through the 8th of the month of Nisan, the Chachamim were busy arguing with the Tzedukim, with the Sadducees, about a point of law concerning the Tomid. What is the Tomid? The Tomid, if you remember, is the daily sacrifice which was offered, you know, in the morning, every morning, and also Bein Ha'abayim in the afternoon, all right? And what was the point of difference? Point of difference was, where does the animal come from that's going to be sacrificed? In other words, who pays for the animal? Don't assume that animals could simply be confiscated and, you know, and sacrificed. That this was against the law, because you sacrifice, you got to pay for the sacrifice. You know, no monkey business, right? Mm-hmm. So, according to the Tzedukim, Tzedukim said that any individual could, if he wanted, donate the animal for the Tomid. The Purushim, on the other hand, or the Chachamim, they disagreed, and they said this could only come from money which had been collected from the community at large. What was the reason, of course, of the Chachamim? Because these sacrifices are on behalf of the entire congregation of Israel. Therefore, it's only right that everyone should have a share in the, you know, the collecting of the funds which would be used in order to buy the animals for these sacrifices, for whatever it may be, whether it's the Tomid or any of the other sacrifices which were brought on behalf of the congregation, as we would say, for the Tzibur. Okay, this was their reasoning. But the Tzedukim, as I said, they said a private individual can do it. Now, how did they, what was the point of the issue? So, the Tzedukim said, look, they said that in the Pasuk it says, right? Now, we know that from the point of view of grammar, the word ta'aseh, you shall make, or in other words, you shall offer in this particular case, is singular. So therefore they said, look, if it's addressed in the singular, ta'aseh, then it means that every individual, if he wants to, can donate the animal, and that's it. So the Tzedukim said, no, sir, you're not reading the text right. True, it says that, but why don't you take a look before, you know, where it's written, it's called B'ni Lachmei B'Yishai, right? Tishmeru, Lahakrivim, Adol, right, and so on, V'yomatolahem, Z'yishesh, Takrivu L'Hashem, and so on. What is the language in all these cases? It's plural. Plural means Tzibur. And so finally, at the end of the, by the time that the 8th of Nisan came, they finally succeeded in prevailing over the Tzedukim as far as this view was concerned, and so they decided to make all these 8 days of the argument back and forth and disputation, and the fact that they finally succeeded in convincing the Tzedukim that they were right, to declare them as a holiday. And this was recorded in the Megillas Titus. Okay? So God's fine. This is one case. Then, another case that the Gemara brings is from the fact that beginning with the 8th day of Nisan, right through Yontif Pesach, there was another disputation that took place. Now, what was the disputation this time? This was in reference to the time when the fixing of the date of Shavuos. We know that in the Torah, it's written over there that, you know, it's Sfatim Lechem and Mochras HaShabbos, that you are to count, right? Sheva Shabbos, Yisbim Siena, etc., etc., right? And then it says this Ruchamishim Yoim, in other words, the 50th day is to be. But the key word over here is what? The Mocharas HaShabbos, on the morrow of the Sabbath. Okay? Now, what was the argument at this point? This time, the argument, again, was between the Chachomim and, and this time, the Gemara says it was a different sect, the Baisusim.
Baisusim,
right. Or Baisus happens to be, it's a Hebrew version of the Greek name Boethius, B-O-E-T-H-I-U-S, okay, who was apparently a leader of a group that also they denied the legitimacy of the Chacham in their interpretation. All right. Now, according to the Baisusim, okay, according to them, the word B'mocharas HaShabbos means literally on the morrow of the Sabbath, right? That's when you start to count. So therefore, it means that if Pesach should, for example, occur on Thursday, right? So you cannot begin the counting of the Omer period, right? Until Motzoi Shabbos. In other words, when the out to the Bochras HaShabbos, this is when you started to count. Okay? Which would mean that according to them, Shavuos would always be on the 50th, which of course would be always on a Sunday, never any other day in the week. Okay? But this is not how the Chachamim interpreted the word B'mocharas HaShabbos. They said, no, Shabbos over here means not Sabbath, but it means the Yontif. And therefore, what it means is that on the conclusion of the first day of Yontif Pesach, this is when the counting of the Omer begins. Of course, in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, the priests would that night go out into the fields, and they had a favorite spot over there where the grain was always very good, the barley grain. They knew that it would be ripe and ready for the harvest, and they would cut it and they would bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, and then it would be used in order to bring a meal offering of barley. And this was the celebration. Of course, the basic idea behind it is not only gratitude to God for the first new grain of the year, but also as of this moment, all other new grains would now be permissible. To this very day, by the way, we have Jews who observe what we call not to eat chodosh. By chodosh they mean new grain. They wait until the Mocharas HaShabbos, in other words, until when it would be brought, the ancient days would be the second day of Pesach, but they go an extra day because we're in Gaulis, okay? So they wait until the third day of Pesach before they're permitted to make use of new grain. They won't eat it. So what do you call the other grain? The answer is you call it Yoshan. Yoshan, which means old. In other words, from the last year, the previous year. Right, so they eat only grain which is Yoshan, and they will not touch Chodosh until after the beginning of Pesach has occurred. Okay? So, this is a law which is based on the Torah, you see. Of course, it's written over there, B'mochas HaShabbos, Yinfin HaKohen, and so on. And V'lechem, Koli V'chalmel, Lo'isochlu, it's written over there, you're not allowed to eat any bread or any parched grain, and so on and so forth. Ad etzem hayom hazeh, until this very day, ad aviyachem is korban alakechem, until the day in which you bring this korban, this sacrifice to God, which is of course the korban ha'omer. Okay, so according to Chachamim, then they said that Shavuos has to be dated, the 50th day, beginning with the second night of Pesach. That's what it means. What B'mocharas HaShabbos is, whereas the Baisusim claim, no, it must always be after the first Shabbos that occurs during Pesach itself. Yeah, sometimes Pesach will be, let's say on the Shabbos, then in that case, the second night will be on the Sunday, as happens about every 3 years approximately, in our calendar. But those years in which it doesn't occur, they still held to their system in the Chacham. And so anyway, they finally convinced them, and so therefore they decided to make these days also holidays in order to celebrate. Okay, so these are two of them that are mentioned at this particular point. The discussion then on Yud Ches continues with the discussion about the fact that days which are mentioned in Megillas Tainus, okay, these days, we say that you have to observe the day before them as a holiday, and also, according to the view of Rabbi Yossi, you have to observe the day after them as a holiday, which of course is a contradiction to the Mishnah, which said what? That before it you observe as a holiday, but the day after, you don't have to, right? It's a mutar, the hespe, you're permitted, to eulogize already, okay? So, they tried to resolve various problems that connected with this. One problem was in connection with the 29th day of Adar. What is the problem with the 29th day of Adar? Problem over there is, they say, why do we have to mention it? After all, the 29th of Adar is the day prior to what? To Rosh Chodesh Nissan, right? So that therefore, even if this Mishnah didn't say anything about Rosh Chodesh Nissan and so on, but we know that Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah, and Purim These are days upon which we're not allowed to fast or to eulogize, okay, on these days.
Right.
Okay? So, if that's so, then why do we have to say the 29th? The 29th of Adar would also be prohibited by virtue of the fact that, it's a day prior to Rish Chodesh, and we know prior to Rish Chodesh you don't do it either. I mean, of course, we do, but you notice, I mean, to this very day, what do we do with Tachlin to Mincha? We always omit it. I mean, we always omit it there of Rish Chodesh, okay, for the same reason. Okay? But, so let's say, why is it necessary? So they say it's necessary because there may be a possibility that, as a matter of, I'll come back to the same date in a moment, but they say there's a possibility maybe that that year Adar will be a Chodesh Me'ubar. In other words, it will be, normally, how many days are there in the month of Adar? The answer is 29. So that normally the 29th of Adar would be the day prior to Rosh Chodesh, right? So if that's the case, then in that particular case, fine. So we would say, I mean, that would already be covered by the rule that you don't have any eulogizing at that particular time, okay? But what if the month of Adar is declared to have 30 days? Which could happen back in the days when they still used to observe the moon and decide, you know, that the month, you know, the new Rosh Chodesh has to be based upon an actual sighting where witnesses came, and the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, half of the Gemara deals with this particular problem, certainly at least half of the Mishnah does, okay, about the sighting of the new moon, the coming before, right, the witnesses have to come, whether they're permitted to be Mechalal Shabbos even in order to give their testimony and things like that, and how the Beis Din has to ask them all kinds of questions to make sure that they're not really spreading a cock and bull story, but they really saw it and things like that and so on, right? So, that being the case, it is a possibility that the Beis Din will decide to make the month of Adar an additional day, have a 30th, because witnesses did not come on the night of the 29th in order to say that we saw, you know, that is at the conclusion of the 29th, to say that we saw it. So in that particular case, then Adar would have 30 days. This is the general accepted view, but Rashi also quotes another view, and that is that maybe the reference here is not to second Adar, but in Ulipi, you know, we have two Adars. And the first Adar always is given how many days? 30 days. Okay. So maybe this is what the reference would be. But in any case, you see that if the 30th day, then the 29th already has no special place, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they say, hold it. 29th also has a special place because it's also the day following the 28th of Adar. So, in that case, if you follow the view, for example, of Rabbi Yosei, who says that you're not allowed to mourn on the day after as well, right? So, in that particular case, what do we find? Then we find that it should be prohibited because it follows the 28th, which is also listed in Megillas Titus. Now, what is the 28th listed in Megillas Titus as? So, the answer is a very beautiful little story that we read last week, and I'd like to go over it again with you because it's really worthwhile to repeat it, okay? So, we're now on Yud Ches Omid Aleph. Yeah. All right. We'll start in. Okay. Beginning with line 5. Okay. It says typically, the Havale Yemen the Bosa Esav and Tmanyabe. Right. Why can't we learn that the 29th of Adar should be a day also celebrated as a Yontif with no fasting, no eulogizing? Right. Because it follows the 28th. The Tanya, as we learned. And this is also what the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. It says, "V'esrim utmanya bay on the 28th day of the month of Adar, asos pesota tafta liyehudai. A good news came to the Jews. Delo yeidu mina raisa, that they would no longer be compelled from they would not be compelled by the Roman government from observing the Jewish religion, from observing the laws of the Torah. Shepam achas, because once nigzera gzerag Yisrael." A gezerah, that is a decree, was made against the people of Israel, shelo yasku b'Torah, that they were prohibited from studying Torah, v'shelo yamulu es b'neihem, And also they were prohibited from circumcising their sons. V'sheyechalalu Shabboses, and also that they should be compelled to be mechalal Shabbos, to profane the Shabbos. Shabbos, of course, is understood Shabbos and Yotov, right? So, Me'o saw Yehuda ben Shemua v'chayrov. So what did Yehuda ben Shemua and his companions do? Holchu v'notlu etzim matchunisa achas. They went and they sought advice from a choshava Roman woman, matronisa, you recognize the word, you know, the Latin word is patrona, which you know, for, like in English, the word matron and so on, right?
Yes.
So it means, you know, a choshava woman, not just tom, you know, feminine, not just a plain woman in Latin, but matrona means already, you know, as I say, an important woman, okay? Shekol gedolei Roman mitzuyin etzlo, and all the big shots of Rome would always frequent her home, okay? In other words, she had like, let's say, a salon or whatever it was, and, you know, if you wanted to be in the inner society in Rome, you would always come to this woman, to her home, okay? So, Omer Lefonov. So she said to Rabbi Yehuda ben Shemua and his companions, she said to them, Imdu v'hafkidu balayla, stand outside, she said, and go and protest during the night. I'm giving an English, a modern translation of the word hafkidu, but, you know, today in Eretz Yisrael, you use the word hafkidu in the sense that you make a demonstration, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the source of it, by the way.
This
okay.
is actually in Rome. They went to Rome.
They went to Rome, undoubtedly. Right, right. Yeah, we have other Gemaras, too. We speak, like, for example, Rabbi Hoshua. And we find also that at other times it was Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Elias and so on. So that from time to time, they would send committees of the Chachamim to Rome in order to plead on behalf of the people of Israel.
Even
had a
demonstration stand, huh?
Yeah, right. So she said to them, stand and demonstrate outside. Hold a demonstration. So they went and they demonstrated that night. Omru, and they said, Ei Shomayim, O heavens, they said, Lo achim anachnu, aren't we brothers? Lo b'nei ovechot anachnu, aren't we the children of one father? Lo b'nei machas anachnu, aren't we the children of one mother, the same father, the same mother? In other words, we're all human beings. Why should we be different from any other nation and tongue, literally? That you should decree such evil decrees against us. And the result was that they did away with the these decrees against the observance of Yiddishkeit. So the Osa Hayom Asu Yom Tov. So they made that particular day, which, as I said, the good news arrived among the people of Israel on the 28th of Adar. So they made it into a Yom Tov. So Omar Abaya says, but this already I explained to you, that if the month of Adar, let's say, became Chodesh Mu'uba, that they had 30 days in Adar, so then the 29th day, which is what the day that they're discussing over here, would lose its significance. Rab Ashi Yomar, he said, Afilu Teim L'Chodesh Choser, he says, even if the month of Adar was Chodesh Choser, in other words, a month which has only 29 days in it. By the way, these terms, Mu'ubar and Choser, we use for the months of the year in general. In other words, Tishrei is always a Chodesh Mu'ubar, right? It's always a full a month, it always has 30 days in it. Or let's say Kislev is always a Chodesh. Well, no, Kislev, that's doubtful. But let's say Shabbat is always a Chodesh Mu'uvar, right? Now, what do we call a month which has only 29 days? That's a Chodesh Choser. As for example, the month of Tevas, okay?
Mean,
or the month of Iyar. Yeah. Choser means lacking.
Lacking.
In other words, it's lacking one day to be a full month, okay? So we use these terms. The reason why I retracted about Cheshvan and Kislev is because, according to the calendar, these may some years be the Ubar, and some years they are Choser, you see. So you have to watch the calendar carefully to see what's what. Pardon me? Yes. Yes. There are times, for example, that Chanukah, of course, always starts on the 25th of Kislev, right? But instead of the you know, the eighth day of Chanukah being on the second day of the month of the Teves, right? It ends instead on the first day, actually. So in that particular case, you know, then you have a problem, you know. But that's not a major problem. Well, as I say, you have to watch the calendar, okay? So that already was arranged, you know, a long, long time ago. But either sometimes both of them can be one or the other. Sometimes one will be one and the other will be the other. So you have to examine your calendar to know which is which. All right. So anyway, getting back. So Rabbi says, Rabashi said, Afilu teim lechodesh chaser, even if the month of Adar were chaser, only 29 days, but kol shacharav betainis chaser behesben mutar. Nevertheless, the rule would be that the day following it is prohibited, is prohibited as far as fasting is concerned, but it is permitted to have a eulogy. But this day, which would be the 29th, inasmuch as it stands right between two Yomim Tovim, namely Rosh Chodesh Nisan and the 28th, which we already said is a Yontif, so therefore Asu Kiyom Tiv Atzmo, so they made it like a Yontif. So it's an exceptional case. Since it's like a real yontif, then in that case it's also prohibited for eulogizing. Okay. So, Omamar, now they go back again to the discussion. They say, one of the Tanoim said, he says, they finally argued out, you know, and settled when the festival of Shavuos was to occur. So, if that's the case, he says, "Delola misped lomeli." Why does it have to say again in the Megillas Tainus that they're talking about that you are not to have any eulogies on that day? You're not, you know, to mourn publicly. In other words, lemeimor. Why can't it simply say mitmanu be from the eighth day of Nisanon? Right? Lemo Metisha Bay. Let it say from the ninth day. In other words, if the eighth day was already mentioned before, we said from the first day to the eighth day, right? Now why do they repeat again from the eighth day to the end of the Pesach? Okay? This is a question. Why can't they say from the ninth day? Metisha Bay, right? From the ninth day. Utmanya Gufe also, and we know that the eighth day anyway would be prohibited. So he says the Havale Yoimod he took in Beit Amida, because that was still in the original one where we said that the first 8 days, including the eighth day of Nisan, right? They argued with the Tzedukim, as we said, and they won the argument, you know, as far as the Tomit is concerned, right. So that the Tomit was established that it has to come from community funds, Mishal Tzibur, and not to come from an individual, right? So why? Why do they have to repeat, you know, the eighth? So he says, Kevan de ilum mikla milsovat linho the shiva tamanya gufa osar. Because they say that, let's say that for some reason or other, it may happen that the Chachamim will have to abolish the series of the Yom Tovim that we said from the first day through the eighth day based upon this. Why would they have to abolish it? The answer is because, again, there might be new persecution on the part of the Roman government. As a result, they would have to say that these days can no longer be observed as festival days, as Yom Tovim, right? But, you know, they revert to ordinary ones because, you know, because of the pressure of the government. So, in that particular case, but nevertheless, Tamanya Gufe Osir. Nevertheless, the eighth day of Nisan would still be prohibited, you know, as far as lamentation, as far as fasting is concerned. The Havada Yomakama the Tusube Chagad Shuaya, because this is still the day which precedes the day upon which they finally establish the fact that the festival of Shavuos has to be Memochvasa Shabbos according to the Chachomim. So they say, all right, Hashta the Osis Lahochi. Well, if you reach this point already in the argument, so Esrim and Tisha Nami, then in that case, let's get back again to the business of the 29th day of Adar that we were talking about. Kevan Dila Nikla Milsa Vatline Li Esrim Manya. So, because maybe there would be, as a result of tzoras, a result of government decrees, that the rabbis would have to say that they can no longer observe the 28th day of Adar as a yontif. So, esu metisha gufei osur, but still the 29th day by itself would still be prohibited from fasting and from mourning. The havale yoma mekamid yoma di tukim tamido, because this is the day which precedes the day upon which they finally began the disputation which resulted in the establishment of when the, of where the Talmud has to come from, right? So, as we see, it's not 100% set because of the fact, even though the Megillas Tainus says that these are days upon which, but why does it repeat it? It repeats it because of the possibility that maybe the days that are mentioned in Megillas Tainus will be abolished. This is the point. So, Itmar, we have learned that Rabbi Chiya bar Asi Omar, he said that Omar Rav, in the name of Rav, he said that the halacha ka Rabbi Yossi. He said the halacha follows Rabbi Yossi, who at the top of the page we learned that Rabbi Yossi says you have a prohibition on the day before and on the day after. Ushmuel Omar, whereas Shmuel said halacha ka Rabbi Meir. He says that halacha follows Rabbi Meir. Now, so where is it mentioned of Rabbi Meir, what his opinion is? So the answer is, it's not mentioned in the Mishnah. But we have a principle about Stam Mishnah. We say that if you have an anonymous Mishnah and it's agreed to by everybody, then in that case the author of that Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. It seems that he had political differences, with the Nasi. And as a result, the Nasi punished him by not mentioning his name in many cases. Okay? Unless it's mentioned that he has this opinion, but they disagree. But when it's a Stam Mishnah, as I say, in that particular case, it's probably Rabbi Meir's opinion. So, now the question is, Miyomar Shmuel Hachi, did Shmuel really say that the halacha follows Rabbi Meir? Remember, what was the Mishnah? The Mishnah said that before, right, we observe it as a yontif, but the day after, it's no longer a yontif, right? So there's already a difference over there between that and Rabbi Yossi's opinion. So as they say, Miyomar Shmuel Hachi, did Shmuel Taka say this? The whole Tanya, didn't we learn that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Eloi Meir, that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, Ma Talmud Leimar, why do we find that the Megillas Tainus says, Behon, Behon, that the word Behon, Behon says, these are the days, right, the Lola Mispeh, Behon, and so on and so forth. You take a look, the quotation is on the previous page over there, right? It's written over there, Ilin Yomor, this is a quotation, that these are days, the Lola Hisandor, Behon, that they are not to fast on these days, right, on them, literally, and some of them also the Lola Mispeh, Behon, right? And some of them you're not allowed to eulogize, because eulogizing maybe would be permitted on some days, but not fasting. Whereas any day upon which fasting was, eulogizing was prohibited, then obviously fasting too would be prohibited. But why have the word behom written twice? This is what he's asking, right? So, why does it say behom behom shtei piyomim? It says loma lecho, to tell you shehein asurin lifneihem lachrehen mutarin, that they are prohibited as far as the day before. The shehein asurin, that those days, the day specifically mentioned, is prohibited, but lifneihem lachrehen mutarin, but the day before and the day after would be permissible, contrary to what we learned in the Mishnah and everything else, right? So the Omar Shmuel, said, halacha k'rabban Shimon Gamliel. He says that the halacha follows Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who just said, that both the day before and the day after, you can eulogize and you can fast on those days, right? So he says, Meikara Savar, at the first he thought, Kaven the Lekotan of the Mekel, Rabbi Meir, since he was of the opinion that there was no Tana who had who was the Mekel, who followed the lenient opinion, except Rabbi Meir. So Omar halacha Rabbi Meir. So he said then that the halacha follows Rabbi Meir. In other words, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel believes in being a Mekel in this business, that you don't have to observe the day before or the day after. But he was of the opinion that, as compared to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir, that Rabbi Meir was the Mekel, right? So therefore, he adopted Rabbi Meir's opinion. However, Kevin the Shomel of Rabbi Shimon, but then when he heard the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, the Mekel Faith, who is a greater Mekel, in other words, he said, neither before nor after do you have to write the Mutoran. So Omar, then he said, the halacha is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. He says, the halacha follows Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. In other words, the lenient point of view. V'cheinum on Bali. And now they say, likewise, there was another Tana by the name of Bali, Omer Rabbi Chiyo, who said in the name of Rabbi Chiyo Barabo, and he said Omer Rabbi Yochanan, who said it in turn in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, and he says Halacha ke Rabbi Yosi. But what did he say? He said Halacha palas Rabbi Yosi. So Omer le Rabbi Chiyo le Bali. So Rabbi Chiyo said to Bali and says Asbur lo, hey, not so fast. Let me explain it to you. He says Ki Yom Rabbi Yochanan Halacha ke Rabbi Yosi, when Rabbi Yochanan said the halacha follows Rabbi Yosi, it's adelole hisano. It's we're talking about not too fast. So now they say umiyoma Rabbi Yochanan hachi, but did Rabbi Yochanan actually say this? Umar Rabbi Yochanan, didn't Rabbi Yochanan say halacha kistam mishnah, that halacha follows literally the anonymous mishnah, which is, we said before would be Rabbi Meir utanan. Not only that, but we also have another mishnah which says afal pi shomer magdimin veloma achrin mutarin behesbei v'tanis. Now this requires a little bit again. Now we have a quotation which comes from the Gemara in Megillah. The first chapter of Megillah, we find that we have a series of dates given upon which we are permitted to read the Megillah. Okay? It ranges from the 11th of the month of Adar through the 15th of the month of Adar. Now, how does this work out? We know only two dates today, right? One is the 14th of Adar, and the other one is the 15th of Adar. All right, let's start with the 15th. Who observes reading the Megillah on the 15th? Huh? Right. Those who reside in a walled city, which was already walled at the time of Yehoshua ben Nun, okay? Which we have very few such cities today, but Yerushalayim is one. And of course, if you were living in the original Shushan, then that too, the law would apply over there. Okay?
Jericho?
Huh?
Jericho?
Well, there's some question about that. Okay?
Yerushalayim.
There's also a question about the area, whether it deserves or it doesn't deserve and so on. But today, we follow the opinion that only Yerushalayim and the original Shushan, right? Well, yeah, you have a walled city within Yerushalayim. Well, it's not only that. The Mishnah also mentions that not only they, you know, the city itself, but if it can be seen, if it's close by and they can see the city, you know, it's within it's a visible range, so in that case they would also follow it. So that would apply, therefore, to the areas around Yerushalayim as well, but not too far, because if you remember, Yerushalayim has mountains all around it, and you can't necessarily see it,
yes.
Right? You know,
far.
You could be just a few miles away, but you can't see Yerushalayim itself. About what? Yeah, with Tiberias, the Gemara, there's the question in the Gemara as to whether it is or it's not, because some say that originally it was called Rakos instead of Tiberias. Tiberias, after all, it's given the name in the days of the Romans, you know. But they say originally it was a town by the name of Rakos over there. So that's where the controversy. But today they don't read in Tiberias on the 15th. They read on the 14th like everybody else. Okay. So the Krakin then, as we said, in other words, the walled cities, right? So the law over there is that you read on the 15th. On the 14th, everybody else reads, right? But there were kfarim, there were villages where they could not get a minyan together. So what was the rule concerning them? When they would come into town for the market period or something like that, you know, market day, which would be either, as we already learned, on a Monday or on a Thursday. Those were the days when they had market periods. Those were the days when the Bezdin would sit also and so on, right? So then they would read, you know, on either the Thursday, let's say, or the Monday, you know, which preceded it. So the possibility would be that it would be the 13th of Adar. There's a possibility that it might be on the 12th of Adar, depending upon what day of the week the 14th of Adar is, all right? Or the most extreme would be on the 11th of Adar. But neither more nor less, okay? can't be, for example, on the 10th of Adar, and it can't be on the 16th of Adar. Cannot be. It has to be these days specifically. So, Utanan, right, I repeat again, even though our sages said that we are permitted to read the Megillah earlier than what? Than the 14th or the 15th, right? But you are not allowed to read it after that. In other words, not allowed to read it on the 16th, let's say, right? So, Mutarim Behesfei V'Tanis, the day upon which they read the Megillah, you're allowed to have a Hesped, and you're allowed to fast on those days. Now, of course, this is a contradiction to what we said before, that Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah, and Purim are days upon which we are not allowed to fast, right? And we're not allowed to make Hesped on those days. So the question is, what are we referring to then when it says Mutarim Behesped V'Tanis? So he says, Amos, when would it be permitted, you know, to either eulogize or, you know, to have mourning or to fast? So he says, Ilimor, if we say B'nei Chamisor, that those who read the Megillah normally on the 15th, like for example people within Yerushalayim, they call Korolei Bar Besor, and they read it on the 14th instead. So Umishori, would this be permitted? By the way, there is one time when they have to do it. That is, if Purim at the 15th, as for example this past year, occurs on Shabbos, then the Yerushalayim, they're not allowed to read the Megillah on that day. When do they have to read it? They have to read it on the 14th. But let's say, in an ordinary year, this is what the question is really about. In an ordinary year, if it wouldn't be, you know, Shabbos, but would the B'nai, you know, the people of Yerushalayim, for example, be permitted to read the Megillah on the 14th instead of the 15th? Is this what we're talking about? Right? Umishori? Is this permissible then? The Hoksiv, it is written, the Megillah's Tainus, and the Megillah's Tainus again, they're quoting that. Yom Arba Osor Bo, Yom Chamisha Osor Bo, right? That the 14th of Adar, as well as the 15th of Adar, is Yomei Purio Inun, these are the days of Purim, Delola Mispeit Bahon, and it is prohibited to observe mourning on these days. So it can't mean that, right? So the Yom HaRova, so Rova said, Leinitzvecho, why do we need this business, you know, about 14th and 15th? In other words, again, he's really referring again to Megillah's Tainus. Why do they have to single out the 14th and the 15th? It says this is necessary, Elo, only, Le'esor Eshel Zeh B'Zeh, Yeshel Zeh B'Zeh, to say that the person who observes, who has to read the Megillah on the 15th, is prohibited from doing what? From doing it on the 14th, or if he has to be on the 14th, he's prohibited from doing it on the 15th. But not only that, but they're also not allowed to fast or to eulogize on either of these days. In other words, the person who observes the 15th still cannot fast or eulogize on the 14th, and vice versa, right? So, but rather, B'nai Arbesar, so maybe we're talking now about, right, the Elo B'nai Arbesar, but are we talking about, you know, the people who have to observe the 14th as the day of Purim? The Kokori Levit Lesar, and let's say they read the Torah on the 13th, because let's say that was the day, so would these people still be permitted on the 13th, is the question. Would they be permitted on the 13th to eulogize or to fast on that day? No, because this is also a holiday. What kind of a holiday is it? According to Megillah's Tainus, they says no. This is Yom Nikanoru. It's the day of Nikanor. We'll read it in a moment about what this Nikanor is. Okay? The Elo, but rather he says B'nai Arbeso. So we have to be referring to the people who are observe the 14th, because Korilei Bitresa, but they read the Megillah when? On the 12th. So he says, hold on. This is also a day. Yom Turianis Tu. This is the day of Turianis, or Trigen, according to others. Said, Elalav. So in that case, we're already narrowing it down to what? The Korilei Bechadesar. That we're talking about people who should have read it on the 14th, but they read it instead on the 11th of Adar, right?
the Kotani, and we learned that in this particular case, Mutar Behester Tanis. This is what the Mishnah is referring to when it says that they are permitted to eulogize and they can observe a fast on that day, namely on the 11th, even though they read the Megillah that day. So he says, lo. So the Gemara says, no, noch nicht, it says. Not yet. It says, b'nei arbo'asor, the kalkorul day betresor, right? As far as the people who should be reading the Megillah on the 14th, but they read it instead on the 12th, and you tell me that, you know, they can't mourn and they can't fast on the 12th of Adar because it is Yom Trayanus. He says, you know, the Yom Trayanus Gute. Betuli Batluhu. But take a look. What happened afterwards? The rabbis came and they negated, you know, they set aside, they said you no longer have to observe. As we would say, they were mevatel, right? They said you no longer have to observe Yom Trayanus. So, why did they put an end to the observance of Yom Trayanus? So the answer is, Hoil b'ner gubosh mayeva achaya ochiv, because on this day, which was Yom Trayanus, the Romans persecuted Shmaya and his brother Achaya, right? Kihod Rav Nachman, as we find, the Rav Nachman gozer ta'aniso betresa. We find that he decreed that you have to fast on the 12th day of Adar. So Omule Rabbonin, so the rabbi said to Rav Nachman, they said to him, Yom Trayanus, who isn't it Yom Trayanus? We shouldn't be fasting on this day, right? So Amaluhu, so he said to them, hey, Yom Trayanus gufe betuli betlu. You know, that day was finally done away with, it was abolished. Right? Because, Shmaya and Achaya, his brother, were condemned to death, were killed by the Roman authorities. So then they say, so maybe we should say, then okay, but we still should not be fasting on this day because it is a day which precedes Yom Nikanor, which we said is on the 13th of Adar, right? So Amar Rav Ashi, said, Hashto Ihu Gufe Betluhu. They abolished that too. So Mishum Yom Nikana Nikim and Nigzar. So shall we now make a decree because it happens to be Yom Nikanor? It's no longer observed either by the rabbis. So now they want to know, so what do we mean by Yom Nikanor, the day of Nikanor, and what do we mean by the day of Trayanus, right? My Nikanor, my Trayanus. So he says to Tanya, as we learn, Nikanor, there was a man by the name of Nikanor, Echod Miaparke Yevonim. He happened to be a very high official among the Greeks. Uvechol Yom Vayom, and every day, Hoyamenef Yodawa Yehuda Yerushalayim. He would raise his fist against Judah and Yerushalayim, the Omer, and he would say, A Mosai Tipel Beyodi Ve'el Nisenem. When will the city of Yerushalayim fall into my hands so that I can trample it into the dust? But when the kingdom of the Hasmoneans, in other words, you know, Yehuda Maccabi and his family and so on, when they gained the upper hand against Nicanor, who was a Greek general, I mean, this is who he was historically, okay? The Nitzchum. And they conquered them, they were victorious over them. So Kotzitzu Behenes Yodav Raglov, so they cut off the big fingers, in other words, the thumbs of his hands and the big, the big toes of his feet. In Hebrew, there's only one word for it, it's Bohen. Bohen Yad, Bohen Regel, you see. Whereas, you know, in English, we make a distinction between, we call one a thumb and the other one we call the big finger? The great toe. Thank you. Okay. Thank God we have a physician in our midst. Right. Uslawom, and they hung them, Mishare Yerushalayim, at the gates of Yerushalayim, V'yomru, and they said, Peshahoyim Adabe Begava, the mouth which spoke with such haughtiness against Yerushalayim and Yehuda, the Yodayim and the hands, Shahoyim and Nifus of Yerushalayim, which were raised. You know, fists that were raised against Yerushalayim, Teyosu Behem Nekama. So let vengeance be exacted on them. So therefore, the day that which they had a victory over the Greek general Nicanor, the Hasmoneans, that is the people, you know, Yehuda Maccabi and so on, they made that into a holiday. And that was, as we said, the 13th day of the month of Adar. Okay? Now, my Trajanus, what about the day of Trajanus, which, as we said before, was on the 12th day? So, Omru, they said, Kishabikesh Trajanus, La'arogus Lulianus, Upapus, Ochib, Elodakia, when Trajanus, or as I said, some say that it was Trajan, but this couldn't be the Emperor Trajan, although he was an anti-Semite and he persecuted Jews, but chronologically, I think that this was earlier, so maybe it's a different one.
Speaking of chronologically, yeah. How come it took so long from this date to Hanukkah?
To Hanukkah? No, we're not talking about Hanukkah. Oh, I see. No, that they were victorious over him, but they didn't immediately go into Yerushalayim, and you know, it took time. They still had to fight until they finally were able to go and you know, claim final victory. Right, right. But this was a great event. I mean, because Nicanor was one of the Antiochus' generals.
They were able to kill the general, hang up his limbs.
Yeah, right. Not all the limbs. Well, I mean, but the thumbs and so on. Yeah. Right, right.
And still, it took.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Took time. Right. Okay. Now, what about Trajanus? He says, "Kishabikesh Trajanus la'rogus Lulianus apapis ochi belodikia," when Trajanus sought to execute Lulianus, who was probably a Jew by the name, right? By the name probably Julian or something like that, but the Gemara comes out as Lulianus. Upapas, his brother, in Laodicea. Laodicea is, it's in Asia Minor. Laodicea or Lydia, they had different names, okay? So when he executed them, or he wanted to execute them, because, you know, they were leading a rebellion against the Roman government. You know, there were various Jewish rebellions against the Romans. I mean, we only think about in terms of two of them, namely the one which took place, you know, when the Jews fought against, Titus and Vespasian and so on and so forth, right? Roughly from about the year 66, 67 of the Common Era until about the year 70 or so. But then again, there was the second one, the big revolt against Bar Kokhba. But in the interim period, there were other Jewish rebellions in other parts of the Roman Empire, including over here in Laodicea, which is referred to the Gemara over here, also in Alexandria. Jews rebelled against the Roman government over there, and there was a horrible persecution. Hundreds and thousands of Jews died.
Time.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying it.
Right.
Egypt.
So at any rate, when he wanted to execute them, Omalahem, so he said to them as follows. He says, Im me'amu shel Hanani mishel v'azayah atem, if you are of the people of Hanani mishel v'azayah, you know, these were the three people in the time of Daniel, who were thrown into the fiery furnace, if you remember, but eventually they escaped, right? So he says, if you belong to the same group, the same people as, you know, as they were, then Yovo Elohechem Yatzil Eschem Yodi. Then let your God come and save you from my hand. Kedeo Sheitzil Eschanani Mishel Vazaryo Miyad Nebuchadnezzar. Just as he saved Hanani Mishel Vazaryo from the hand of Nebuchadnezzar. By the way, you know, Hanani Mishel Vazaryo, this was the Hebrew names, but they had Goyish names too. You remember? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Right, okay.
As the song goes.
Right, right. So Omru Lo, so they said unto him, that is, this is Lulianus and Pappas, they said to Trajanus, they said to him, Hananya, Mishael, Vazario, Tzadik, and Gemurmai. Those people, you know, Hanan, Mishael, and Zaria, they were
righteous.
Perfectly righteous people. You know, Tzadik Gomer, it's the highest thing you can say about it. 100% righteous. And they were worthy. They deserved that a miracle should be performed on their behalf. Not only that, but the king Nebuchadnezzar says, Melech Hogan Hoya. He was a real king, a worthy king, you know, not some tramp or schlep or something. He was a real king. So, and therefore he was worthy that a miracle should be performed, you know, through him. In other words, his actions, so on and so forth. So the Yosa Russia, but that wicked man, and of course they mean you, Russia, you. Head Yotu. You're only a commoner, you know. You're not even, you know, royalty. And you don't deserve that a miracle should be performed, you know, through you. Not only that, the Yonu, as far as we're concerned, Nishayavnu Kloy Elamokim. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam has said that our time has come and we have to die. The Imein Ator Horgenu, and if you decide, you know, you change your mind, you say that they're not going to kill us. So Harbi Hargim Yeshlo Lamokim. Believe me that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam has many agents who can bring about death. The Harbi Dubin Vagoyes Yeshlo Lamokim Boilamai. And he has many, for example, bears and lions, right? In his world, Shepogin Bono, who could attack us, Behogin Osan, and kill us. Elo, Lo Misarono Akarish Bokhub Yodecha, but the Rabbeinu Shel Olam did not hand us over into your hands. Elo Shosibi Para Dominim Yodcha. But for one reason, and that is that our blood will be avenged. You will have to pay the penalty for slaying us. And, you know, and they will come when the Rebbeinu Shel Olam will exact punishment from you for having killed us. Afal Pichain, nevertheless, in spite of what they said to him, Haragon. He killed them. Right. So Miyad, immediately, Omru, they said, Lezozu Misham, that they did not even stir from there. That is, you know, that they hadn't even moved from the place where the execution took place. Ad Shebod Yufle Meroma, until the Yufle came, and Rashi explains the Yufle. You notice the word the U, which is like duo. In other words, two, right? In other words, two. The other word is probably from the Greek word, which means, you know, big shot or something. So two big shots came from Rome. Ufotu es mocho begezon, and they split his head. That is, you know, this Trajanus. They split his head with an axe and so on.
Club,
yeah. Or a club or something like that. Right. Okay. So, as a result, they celebrated the day upon which he was slain by his own people in Rome as a day, you know, also as a holiday.
Club, yeah.
All right. Now, the Mishnah concludes with it says, "En gozen tanis latziba b'tchilo b'chamishim." It says that you're not allowed to proclaim, to start a series of fasts upon the community beginning with a Thursday. Why not? Because we've already said that if you fast on Thursday, it's going to destroy the market, because it means that, you know, the vendors will say, not only they're going to have to buy in order to break the fast, they also have to buy for Shabbos so that we can jack up the prices. So in order to prevent that from happening, that's why they said that you do not begin a series on Thursday. Instead, as we learned, if you're going to have a series of three fasts, you have it on Monday, Thursday, and Monday. So why not? There's still Thursdays involved, but the answer is, once you have it on Monday, so people already know that this is going to happen, so they'll buy already enough food, let's say on Wednesday, for whatever it may be, you know, in order to be prepared for the Thursday fast. So that on Thursday, all that they have to do is to buy for Shabbos, and that wouldn't lead to a jacking up the prices the way the other way would be. All right. So now the Gemara asks, yes. And it says, you know, not to do it. And then it says also in Gozvin Tanis Perosha Kadoshim, right, that you're not allowed to proclaim a fast, a public fast, on Chanukah, on Rosh Chodesh, on Chanukah and Purim. This is what it says in the Mishnah at the end. Okay? So now they're going to discuss that. First of all, they want to know, it says, V'chama havi haschola. How many days are involved that you're talking about you're not allowed to begin a series of public fasts? So Rav Acha Omar, Rav Acha said, Sholosh. He says, we're talking about a series of three fasts. Because if, let's say, it was only one fast, then, you know, maybe it would be passable, right? But if you have three, then already it takes on the character of being a a public service fast. Of course, halacha follows him in that if you do this, you know, we have
two occasions during the year too. In the month of Cheshvan, following the holidays that were observed in Tishrei, and also in the month of Iyar, following the festival of Pesach, some people fast, and they fast what they call Tanis Bahav. Again, what does Bahav mean? Beis is Monday, Hey is Thursday, and the next Beis is the following Monday, okay? And they do it some sort of a tone, because we have a reference to that already in the book of Job, that he would ask his children, you know, whether they had, in the time that they were eating and drinking, whether they had inadvertently, enjoy themselves too much, too much merriment, and maybe they did things that they would, they would regret later on. So the fasting is in order to atone for it. And there are yeshivalite who do it. I know that, for example, my son-in-law observes Bahav, because in his yeshiva, they still observe it.
So they fast on
Monday, Thursday, and Monday again. All right. So this is the din as far as Rabbah is concerned. But Rabbasi says no. He says, achas, it can be just even one day. Okay? But even one day, you know, it would not be right, you know, to do it on Thursday, all right? So, Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav, Sudivei Rabbi Meir. Rav Yehuda said, in the name of Rav, he says, this is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. She Omar Mishun, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, or maybe in the name of Rabbi Gamliel. But Avol Chachomim Oimen, but Chachomim say as follows. They say, let's say that you did proclaim a fast for an emergency, whatever reason it may be, but you proclaimed it, let's say, and it happened to be on Rosh Chodesh. What do you do in that case? So he says, the din is, he says, Misane Umashne. In that case, you fast, and you have to complete the fast. You have to fast the whole
day, even though
it's Rosh Chodesh. And the same then obviously would apply to if it happened to occur during Hanukkah or Purim, right? Although this is contrary to what we do, but nevertheless, if you had begun a series of fasts, you know, because it was an emergency in character, then in that case, you do fast even against this prohibition, and you have to complete the fast. Dorish Mar Zutra, and Mar Zutra derived this Mishmei de Rav Huna, and he said, Halacha Misana Misham. So he says the same thing. He says in the name of Rav Huna as well, that the halacha is Misane Mishum, that you have to fast and you have to complete the fast. So, Hadron Halach Seder Taniyos Ketzad, we have now completed the second chapter of Tainus and Yirtzah Hashem, when we come back again in October and begin learning, we'll start with chapter 3. As you can see, we're more than halfway through, we're practically almost two-thirds of the way through the Gemara.
How many chapters are there? Three chapters.
No, there are four chapters. Right. So we'll start chapter 3, very beautiful chapter we'll find. Chapter 4, where they really get into fast days that we're more familiar with. And they're all together, there are 31 dabbim. So, Yirtzeh Hashem, the Rebbeinu Shlomo will give us the kayak that we'll be able to make a siyum in a few months from now. And then we should be able, you know, not only to make a siyum on the Gemara, but to continue to learn. Okay, Rabbi. Nadiman Akash Shemar, Adonai, Chotei, Saman, Sikoi, Yadil, Kevon, Yadil, Kavishabah.
This Gadel, this Gadesh, Shmei Rabo, Yomo, Dibra, Hirase, Yom Lechmachuse, Rechaye, Chon, of Yome, Chon, of Rechaye, the whole base Israel.
All right, so now we're ready to begin the third chapter. It begins actually with the entire Mishnah for the chapter. And after that, they'll go into the Gemara. Okay. So, the Mishnah begins by saying, Seder Taniyah Seder. Ha'amu Abrevi Arishayna. All right. It says, all this business, you know, of fasting that we say that it has to go in a certain order, you know, that first only the Yechidim is on in, and then after that people begin to fast themselves, and then afterwards it becomes, you know, we learned in the previous chapter that during the, you know, that there were actually three series of fasts, as we learned. The first three, and then the second three, if there was still no rain, and finally there were seven fasts that were proclaimed. And we saw that in the last ones, you know, if there was no rain, it was much more serious. Not only did they have to fast, you know, more than 24 hours, you know, like they would do on, let's say, on Yom Kippur or Tisha B'Av and so on, but actually they would take out the Ark, the Aron Kodesh, into the public square, and you know, and then there would be the Rekavushin, you know, they would have talks given, you know, to that their hearts should be subdued, that they should do tshuva and things like that, and so on, so that they should pray with the proper kavana, you know. So what the Mishnah is telling us over here at the beginning of chapter 3 is that in reality we're talking now about rain that failed to come during the very first period. And of course, if that's the case, it means that we're going to find a little bit difficulty, because so far we've worked on the assumption that what? That, let's say, begin, the rainy season should begin about Cheshvan, alright? Beginning of Cheshvan and so, if it's not raining by then, so in that particular case, you know, then, you know, you're starting to pray. As a matter of fact, remember again what we learned, that in Eretz Yisrael, they begin saying Talmud Motor actually on the seventh day of Cheshvan. And the reason why they begin on the seventh day of Cheshvan is because it's exactly 2 weeks after the end of the festivals, you know, the Sukkahs, the Shemini Atzeres, and so on, so that the early regalim, those people that actually made a pilgrimage on foot from Eretz Yisrael
should be able
to get back to Babylonia. I mean, should be able to get back to their homes in Eretz Yisrael. I mean, because as far as Babylonia is concerned, you know, that's already, we've learned that in Babylonia they had a different system for beginning, which was the 60th day of the Tekufa. Okay, and that of course is that mysterious date that we still find in our own Siddur. You know, should we say it on the 4th or the 5th of December or whatever it may be, and so on. Of course, that has to be calculated year by year.
And when does the Tekufa begin?
When does the Tekufa begin? This is a very good question. We talked about that a long time ago. We mentioned that it's supposed to actually coincide, you know, with the time, let's say, of the fall equinox, you know. In other words, around December the 21st.
September the 21st.
Yeah. But the problem that you have over there is simply the fact that, you know, then there were changes made in the calendar itself. So that when they switched, let's say, from a Julian calendar upon which this was predicated to what we call the Gregorian calendar, which is the one, you know, which is in use in our Western world today, so it meant that they had to shift around dates. And that's the reason why it winds up in December instead of, let's say, being maybe in October, in November or something like that, okay? So that would account for it. All right. So the Mishnah here is saying then that what we're talking about, you know, that with all the special fasting, you know, that Yechidim Nisanin is what she says, you know, that the first, you know, the most important individuals, they begin with the fasting and everything else, and then afterwards Achar Kein, you know, Tzibur, Holchin, Nisanin, you know, and so on, Yud Gimel, in other words, they keep on fasting until they've completed a series of 13 different fasts, right? So when is this in Lo Nanu? Of course, says Rashi, if they were not answered yet by rain. So all this refers, he says, to the Revi'a Rishona. And the Revi'a Rishona, says Rashi, it says, Im Ovar Zman Revi'a Rishona Shal Yore. Let's say that the time when it should happen, the very first time when rain should be falling, of the Yore, the former rain, Velo Yordo Gishomim. And, you know, there still wasn't any rain. So this is when Misanin or Hilchin considers it. This is when they proclaim the series of fasts and they do that. All right. So now the Mishnah over here introduces a new element. It says, how about Smochim? Sheshonim Asriyin Alehem Miyad. He says, but in the case of plants, Sheshonim. Now we know that the word Shoneh in Hebrew means different. Of course, it has other meanings. If those
different.
Of you who are here
different.
For Shabbos, huh?
Different.
Different means, right. And of course, I mean, don't forget, for example, Manishtana Halayla Hazeh. I mean, what are we saying when we say Manishtana? We're saying, really, how different is this night, you know, from all others? In what way, you know, what are the things that made it so different? All right. So, plants that have become different. So, now the question is, what is plants that have become different? So, Rashi has a somewhat fanciful, I have to say, interpretation, because we'll take a look at Rabbeinu Gershom, for example. He gets a very poshut
explanation. Okay. Rashi says that Avol Tzmochim Shoshonu says Shanishtanu Mimin Hogan, that they changed from their accustomed way. In other words, a plant should grow in a normal way, right? But I'm looking at the Rashi.
Yes.
Okay? You see the third line in the Rashi. Shoshonu Mimin Hogan, right? He says Shanishtanu Mimin Hogan. In other words, he says that a change has taken place from the way that they normally should develop. And then he says this, which is, I say, it's a little bit difficult for me to understand what Rashi is saying over here. He says, Tachas Chita, for example, he says, instead of wheat coming forth, so he says, Yotze Choach, thorns or thistles have come forth instead. Tachas Seora, instead of the barley, Bosha. Bosha means, you know, that it's rotted away or something like that. Okay. Shelo hayu chitim mishibolim, and he says because it means that there was no wheat in the stalks. In other words, the ears, you know, that normally should carry, you know, the grains of wheat, they were empty. They weren't there. So if that's the case, o shinu yachir, or if there's any other change that takes place in the normal plants. So masriya nalehen miyad. In that case, immediately you have to be masriya. Now the question is, now let me finish the Rashi over here. He says, immediately you have to be masriya, afilu barishoynes, even during the very first weeks or so. Shekol chomer achroynes nohig bahen. And not only that, but if they decide, you know, that this is a sufficient calamity, then in that case they have to do all those things that were already mentioned as what normally would be done during the last weeks of the fasting period, and do it at this particular point, and then not wait, you know, in order to introduce all the severity of the fasting. Alright, so now of course the question is only what do they mean by masriya, and that we saw that there was a machlekes about that, that there are two different opinions. One opinion said that Masriya means taka that you blow shofar, as we learned, you know, that the Kahanim would blow, you know, tekiyo, trua tekiyo, something like that, right? And therefore they would blow shofar as a sound of alarm, so to speak. And the other one is that, you know, you daven with extra kavona, you shrei to the Beit Shalel, you know, please help us. As we learned, for example, you said, Anenu Ad Hashem Anenu, right? Or Mishon Abraham Avinu Bahar Meiro, Hu Yah Anenu. And so may God who answered Abraham, you know, may he answer us, and so on and so forth. So, either one. Of course, we can say that both, Taka maybe, they're both are valid interpretations, and maybe they did both, you know. They not only shied with their davening, but also that they blew shofar at the same time. Yeah. So the point is that this is a shofar, of course, it's the shofar of alarm. And therefore, it's an alarm that has to be sounded to wake up people.